ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 23, Text Number 24, The Song of the Yuvanti Brahmana. Devarishi Picha Bhutani
Devarishi Picha
Bhutani Yatin Bandham Shabhagina Asambivajya Chatmanam Yachavitaha Tatachara Devarishi Pichi Bhutani Gyatin Bandham Shabhagana Asambivajya Chatmanam Yakshavita Patachara Devarishi Picha Bhutani Gyatin Bandham Shabhagana Asambivajya Chatmanam Yakshavita Patachara Deva. The demigods, Rishi, sages, Pichi, departed forefathers, Bhutani, and living entities in general, Gyatin, one's immediate relatives, Bandhun, extended family, Cha, and Bhagyanaha to the shareholders, Asambivajya, not distributing, Cha, and Atmanam to oneself, Yakshavitaha, his wealth is simply like that of a Yaksha. Patati, he falls, Adha, down. One who fails to distribute his wealth to the proper shareholders, the demigods, sages, forefathers, and ordinary entities, living entities, as well as his immediate relatives, in-laws, and own self, is maintaining his wealth simply like a yaksha and will fall down. Purport, one who does not share his wealth with the above mentioned authorized persons and does not even enjoy the wealth himself will certainly suffer unlimited problems in life. Text 25. Yavyata yate hayavitam pramatasya vayobalam kushalayena siddhanti janataha kimnu saddayen. Discriminating persons are able to utilize their money, youth, and strength to achieve perfection. But I have feverishly squandered these in the useless endeavor for further wealth. Now that I am an old man, what can I achieve? Kasmat sankrishyate vidvan vyata yate ha yasakrite kasyatin ayanunam lokayam su vimohita. Why must an intelligent man suffer by his constant vain endeavors to get wealth? Indeed, this whole world is most bewildered by someone's illusory potency. Kim dana dana dhera kim bakim kamerava kalama dhera uta mrityuna krasya manasya karma bi vata janmadai. For one who is in the grips of death, what is the use of wealth or those who offer it, sense gratification or those who offer it, or for that matter any type of fruitive activity, which simply causes one to again take birth in the material world. Namme Bhagavam Stusta Sarvadeva Mayohari Yena Nito Disham Ittam Hirvidas Tatmana Prabhaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Hari, who contains within himself all the demigods, must be satisfied with me. Indeed, he has brought me to this suffering condition and forced me to experience detachment, which is the boat to carry me over this ocean of material life. Purport. The Brahmana could understand that the demigods, who award different types of sense gratification as a result of one's fruitive activities, can bestow the highest benefit in life. When the Brahmana lost all his property, he could understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who comprises all the demigods, had given him the highest perfection, not by awarding sense gratification, but by saving him from the ocean of material enjoyment. Being thus deprived of the opportunity to cultivate religiosity, wealth, sense gratification, and liberation, the Brahmana became detached, and transcendental knowledge awakened within his heart. So this is the the understanding of the devotees, is that they see suffering as another feature of the Supreme Lord. The devotees of the Lord see the Supreme Lord within everything, and the non-devotees cannot see the Supreme Lord anywhere. The non-devotees cannot see the Supreme Lord within their own hearts, or within the atom, within the governing principles of the material manifestation, and they cannot see the Supreme Lord without, even if the Lord appears in the form of the deity. They look at the deity and they think that the deity is just stone. They cannot understand, of course, that how is it that this so-called stone is more successful in life than they are. They're thinking this is just an ordinary stone, which means that their lives are more worthless than a stone. Because Krishna, who is supposed to be a stone, is getting fed opulent meals throughout the course of the day. You're getting dressed in the most valuable silks and jewels and clothing, offered fresh garlands, always as beautiful, the best of devotees, coming very clean and nicely dressed, singing beautiful prayers. So they cannot see that here is supposed to be a stone, and yet we do not see that anyone else in the material world enjoys such a life as the deity of the Lord. There is no one. There is no one on this planet that actually receives the luxurious and loving, lifestyle that the deity of the Lord lives. But they cannot see that. They just see here is a stone. They cannot see past that. They cannot even, they would not even consider that even if it is stone, it must be something special. It must be, generally we understand that people, will pay millions of dollars for a diamond because they understand that it has some special, potencies to make life, better. People understand that gemstones, especially the primary gemstones, have some special quality, and therefore, in some countries, of course, they will kill for certain stones. And yet, when they see the deity of the Lord, even though the deity of the Lord is showing a potency to turn degraded people into first-class human beings, they do not want to see that. They buy gemstones and think that yes, these gems will attract opulence, they will attract the opposite sex, they will make me more powerful, they will protect me from the evil eye, they will give. So people, they spend millions of dollars for precious stones, but when they look at the deity and they see the potency, that here the deity has the ability to turn ordinary or very fallen people, if they keep coming to see the deity, then by the association with the deity they become purified of all of their bad habits, which is something the governments spend billions of dollars trying to help people to get free from drug addictions. Billions of dollars, and they have so many programs. But those same people, if they come before the deity, drug addiction very shortly gone. But they cannot see the potency, so they will accept that yes, this stone has is something special. But when it comes to the deity of the Lord, they will not acknowledge anything. No, it's just an ordinary stone. So they cannot see the presence of the Lord. They cannot even contemplate at all. And of course, even when the Supreme Lord appears himself, as Krishna did 5,000 years ago, he appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, still, just like Krishna appeared, and of course his pastimes are very bewildering because he appeared to take birth, and he appeared like an ordinary human being. Krishna appeared like an ordinary human being. He appeared in his original form, and two arms, two legs, and a beautiful smiling face. So he appeared in this beautiful form, and because he resembles an ordinary human being, he resembles one of them, they cannot believe that he can be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in order to convince him that yes, I look like an ordinary human being, and in many ways my activities resemble an ordinary human being, but I will show some potencies that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then he would, when there were 16,108 women who had been kidnapped, and Krishna freed them, and of course because they had the custom in the Vedic times, of course, that no one would actually accept them as a wife because of their circumstances, even though it was unfortunate and they weren't at fault. But Krishna, he agreed, yes, I will accept all 16,108 wives. So then of course Krishna lived in palaces He expanded his form so that he lived with each and every 16,108 wives. And he performed different activities and had 10 different sons and some daughters to each and every one of them. So instead of thinking, how can he be an ordinary being? They think, no, he is an ordinary being. Just see how lusty he is. So again, instead of thinking, you know, even when he displays a potency to show that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they can't get past the fact that he is in a human form. And therefore, because he marries so many wives, they will see, just see how lusty he is. How can he be God? Prabhupada points out, of course, that even if we say he's lusty, then he's unlimitedly lusty. So that still makes him God. Yeah. But actually he's not lusty, because we have to consider, if God is unlimitedly lusty, then by limiting himself to marrying only 16,108 wives, we can see his renunciation. So in any case, people will not see that he is manifesting. If he is able to single-handedly annihilate millions of soldiers who attack him, being envious of him, then if he annihilates them, all these people who want to kill him, then they will say, oh yes, you're an ordinary living entity because you're partial. How can you be God? God cannot be partial. So you have acted as the enemy. So therefore, you cannot be God. So we see also that Duryodhana, he had the same mentality, that people would tell Duryodhana that this Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no possibility that you can win this war. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, he was told by Srila Vyasadeva, Markandeya Rishi, Narada Muni, Vidura, Krishna himself, and many, many other sages, that Krishna and Arjuna were in fact the Supreme Lord, Naranarayana Rishi. Naranarayana Rishi, they descend and they manifest themselves as great rishis performing penances and austerities, and they're very, very powerful. So Duryodhana was told that, even this Nara, there is not even the demigods, there's not even any demigods or even all of them together who could actually defeat this Nara, who is actually Arjuna. And Narayan is even more powerful. And Srila, it was Narada Muni, one of those saints, told Duryodhana that, I think it was Bhishma, because Bhishma, of course, when he grew up in the heavenly planets. His mother Ganga took him back to the heavenly planets, and he had the opportunity to hear many conversations with different sages in the you know, celestial courts of Indra and what have you. So one time they were telling a story there that there was this very, very powerful king who became very puffed up with his power, and he amassed a huge army, and he was looking for someone to conquer, someone who could, so he was conquering and killing so many people. So someone directed him to Narada Narayan Rishi. So when he got there, he challenged Narayan to a fight, and Narayan said, "I'm not interested in fighting. I'm, you know, performing penances and austerities and deep in meditation, and I'm not interested." He said, "No, no, you must fight me. You must fight me." So Narayan picked up a handful of grass and threw it at his soldiers. So there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of soldiers, and these pieces of grass, they turned into, you know, like razor darts, and they just cut these soldiers to pieces. They all just slaughtered, you know, hundreds of thousands of soldiers, just throwing a handful of grass at them. And then this king, you know, immediately fell down and begged for forgiveness. And Narayan Rishi told him that, you know, whenever you, if there is some, you know, you should never attack an enemy without knowing his strength. And of course, from memory, Bhishma Dev was telling Duryodhana that how can you want to fight with Krishna and Arjuna? You do not know their strength. You do not know that they're actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that you cannot defeat them. Like this. but Duryodhana would consider that, yes, you know, they've certainly done some wonderful things. I have also done some wonderful things, and you know, there are some powerful Duryodhana, of course, the Danavas or the demons, some of the chief demons appeared to him and told him that they will empower him to win the battle of Kurukshetra, and that they would even enter within the army, the key fighters on the other side, in order to bewilder them. Like this, so and they, you know, assured him that, you know, with our strength, we will defeat them, even if they are celestial beings. Like this, so Duryodhana considered that, yes, they may be wonderful, but I also have my celestial beings backing me. But he couldn't understand that if Krishna is God, then why is he, you know, why is he favouring the Pandavas and not me? So therefore, this was always a doubt that, you know, perhaps he's not God. You know, and Krishna went to see Duryodhana on a peace mission, and when Krishna went there, he stayed with Vidura, who was a great devotee of the Lord. And Duryodhana said, "Come to my palace and dine with me while you are here." And Krishna said, "No, I will not eat your food." So, because this made Duryodhana really angry, and he said, "You know, here again you're showing your partiality. You know, you'll eat with the Pandavas, you'll eat with the Dura, but you won't eat with me." Krishna said, "I will eat with you when you do as I say. You know, when you fulfill my wishes and give back the kingdom to the Pandavas, even half the kingdom to the Pandavas, then yes, we will. Then I will come and I will eat with you. But otherwise." He said, unless a person is, there's two reasons why one will accept food from someone. One is if they're particularly distressed, and wonders if that person offering the food there is an affectionate relationship. And he said, I am neither distressed and nor are you being affectionate, and therefore I will not eat your food. In fact, you're being very sinful, which is even more reason why I will not accept your offerings. But still, Krishna went there. So anyway, he was going to have a talk with Duryodhana the next day. So he went to, he was staying with Vidura, and Vidura said to him, why are you going to speak to Duryodhana? Because you know that he will not listen. Not only that, but there's a big chance that he may even attack you and try and kidnap you. which he eventually did. He tried to kidnap Krishna. So he said, there's no value. One, Vidura, of course, he didn't want to see Krishna insulted. That would be very difficult for him to bear. So he tried to prevent him going. He didn't want to see him walking into a place where he would be insulted and even harassed, or someone would try and be violent towards him. So he wanted to protect him as a friend. And he thought that Duryodhana, there was no use in talking to him because he would not listen, which was correct. But Krishna said to him that I have come here to perform a pious deed, that even though Duryodhana may do these things, of course I'm not fearful of Duryodhana, and even though Duryodhana may not listen, but what sort of a friend would I have been if I didn't try? He said, when someone is, when a friend sees that another friend is on the precipice of destruction, he will try and help that person, even if he has to drag that person by the hair. So, out of friendship for Duryodhana, I'm going to try one last time. As Krishna described, that when a person actually performs pious acts, even if they're not successful, because they made the attempt, they actually get the result. They get the result of performing a pious act anyway. So they still accrue piety by making that attempt, even if they don't. The attempt is in one sense a failure. So there was no loss for Krishna, but he had everything to gain. And he said also that Duryodhana's mood is that I am partial, but if I try and help him to the very last minute, he cannot ever say that I was not his friend, and nor can anyone else ever criticize me that I am partial. We see that actually, although Krishna appears in a human form, for so many different reasons, it is such a stumbling block for people to see that here the Lord has a human form, and therefore they cannot see. His activities appear to be very human. He appears to be lusty, he appears to have enemies and get angry at them. He appears to be doing so many things that ordinary people do. So therefore Krishna, in many different occasions, he manifests his godly qualities, but those who are really stubborn, there are two reasons why people cannot understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One is due to a poor fund of knowledge, by trying to understand him with their limited material mind and senses. And the other reason they can't understand that He's the Supreme Person of God is because they're just so stubbornly resolved that He, you know, will not. He is not God. So out of this stubbornness, even when He displays that He is the Supreme Lord, they will not accept. So the non-devotees, they cannot see the Supreme Lord at any time, or at any place. They cannot see Him within, they cannot see Him without. Even if He appears directly in front of them, they still cannot see Him. And Krishna also, if someone is determined not to, wants to stubbornly believe, yes, there is no Supreme Personality of Godhead, then Krishna gives them the opportunity. He allows them to have that faith. They want to be covered by illusion, so Krishna covers Himself by His curtain of illusory energy. Therefore you see that actually when Krishna, after performing His pastimes for 125 years and performing so many inconceivable activities, He, just so that the atheists who want to disbelieve that He was God, when He returned back to Godhead in the same with Lord Balaram, they actually left a body that appeared to be a material body, which was cremated. Krishna Balaram. Krishna was shot in the foot with an arrow by a hunter, and Krishna just went back to the spiritual world. But he left a apparent mortal frame for the atheists. And Balaram, after the Yadu dynasty had been destroyed, an antisatia, huge snake, manifest came from out of his mouth and took Balaram. Balaram just sort of disappeared into the horizon. But he also left a mortal frame. And of course, I think it was maybe Arjun, not sure who it was, maybe Arjun, who performed the cremation. Arjun? I think it was Arjun. And, in order to, for the atheists to continue with their determination, their stubbornness that Krishna, there is no Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore Krishna makes so many arrangements like this. And sometimes Krishna also of course His human-like activities are also particularly bewildering to them, so they cannot see Him in any stage, the non-devotees. And yet the devotees, they can see Him at all times and all places. They always perceive how the super soul is sitting within the heart of all living entities. So when they see that someone, you can speak to someone about Krishna consciousness, and you can see that they cannot understand even something which may be very simple to understand. You may tell something to a small child about Krishna, and you can see that very quickly they will understand that is not very difficult. But then you may have some professor who's supposed to be very, very learned, and you tell him the same simple truth and he cannot grasp it at all. He just cannot understand it. And you can see that it's the super soul within the heart, that the super soul allows one to attain transcendental knowledge despite their material condition, or despite their wonderful so-called material education and knowledge, you know, the super soul sitting within the heart does not allow them to understand. We can see the workings of the universe, that such an intricate and complex cosmology, so many living entities, and each interrelated with the other in a web of life. If we look at nature, the more we look at nature, the more we should be able to see how some supreme intelligent being, because we know as Krishna, who manifests as his super soul form, has set up a nice interdependent situation. So it is the material world, the material universe, is like a wonderful machine, a huge machine that's working so nicely. If you take certain machines, you get to, maybe our so-called scientists produce, they might put a little light bulb in there so there's light. So we have our light bulb that is the sun. They might put some heating, they have different sorts of insulation, they have different components that move, different components that regulate movement of the different parts that make other parts move, like this. So it is a machine. If we look at the universe is this wonderful machine, and everything is working as one whole unit. All the little bits and pieces have a particular place. We see that. This is the thing the scientists are grappling with. That because they cannot see that, just like, for instance, if you take apart a computer and you pull one part out and then put it back together and then it doesn't work, and you think, well, it's just one little part. But you don't realize that the person that set it up, each part has an important role in the functioning of the whole machine. It doesn't, it just looks like a little screw or a little bit of plastic or something, but it's very important. You take that one little part, or that one little part becomes dysfunctional, the whole machine suffers to some degree. They don't realize that the universe functions the same way. It's working as one complete machine. They just see, everything as accidentally, oh, there's sand on the beach, well, that's an accident. There's stars in the sky, that's an accident. There's a moon and the sun, it's all just, an accident, but it had no meaning, it had no purpose. But actually, Krishna put a moon in the sky so we have light at night. He put a sun in the sky so we have light in the day. Everything has, a particular role. There are clouds in the sky. There's a certain type of atmosphere to prevent harmful rays coming from the universe. Everything is there, and as soon as you damage something, the machine, it plays up a little bit. Even though it may appear sometimes, even just like in China one time, they decided that they didn't like sparrows. Somehow, maybe they were passing stool or something, so they decided many, many years ago that they would kill every sparrow in China, which they did, yeah. And they just, the whole population was ordered, you have to kill every sparrow. So they killed every sparrow, and then all the sparrows were gone. And what do you think happened? They had a massive plague of locusts, because the sparrows eat the locusts. Millions of people died because of the loss of crops. They'd lost all their crops to feed the whole country. Well, one little bird, who's going to miss one little bird? Like this. So they cannot see that the universe is working as one complete unit, and everything is being put there for a particular reason in this beautifully designed machine. And who can design such a machine? And even if you can design a machine such as the universe, who's big enough to put it all together? Who's going to get the sun and put it in its right place? Who's got the potency? Who can hold it? If you're going to pick up the sun and put it there, how are you going to get it there? It's this burning mass. Now, they have these documentaries about moving big chunks of iron and big things around the world. How wonderful the scientists think they are! They have some big machines and they have a whole hour and they watch how difficult it is to move it with cranes and things. But how would you get the sun, where it is, and then just have it to just nicely situate itself there for billions of years? Who can set this up? So we can only imagine the intelligence and the craftsmanship of the Supreme Lord. So the devotees, they see within everything the Supreme Lord, and they also recognize the Supreme Lord when he personally appears, because of the as revealed through Shastra and the Sadhu and the Guru, and they hear about the Supreme Lord, and it becomes very, very obvious that yes, there is no one who can compare with Lord Sri Krishna. If anyone was to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it must be Lord Sri Krishna. There is no history of any other person that even can come within one billionth of a trillionth of a, of an inch close to Krishna's pastimes. Mm-hmm. No other history of anyone who can compare. Of course, people are very foolish that, if someone does anything a little unusual once, then they are God. Just makes a lucky guess at something and they think, oh, he's all-knowing, Just once they just do something a little unusual once, and that's good enough, and we will take you as God. And yet Krishna displays continuous, unlimited, inconceivable pastimes, but they want to be cheated. So the devotees of the Lord, of course, they see the Supreme Lord everywhere, and within and without. And therefore, when there is suffering, they see also, yes, this is another form of Krishna. There's so much, somehow or another, by the will of Krishna, he is giving me the opportunity to think clearly about what my goals are in this material world. Sometimes we become intoxicated with a little happiness. For a few days we may get just a glimmer of a hope that, yes, I think I can be happy in the material world. And we forget about the birth, an ex-birth, what that may be, death, banging on the door, disease, old days, and we forget all, just a little glimmer of some things going right, and then yes, I can see it all now, I'm going to be very, very happy. And we become intoxicated so quickly. So Krishna, especially for his devotees, but also for the non-devotees, although they cannot see it, he appears in the form of the suffering, which actually helps one to, one's intelligence to sober up. One becomes sobered up very quickly. Oh, gee, what was I thinking? Like this. what is my real business? And so a person then becomes more serious about their Krishna consciousness. So that is the mercy of the Lord. Actually, Srila Prabhupada described, of course, that that very thing happened to him. His spiritual master asked him to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. And of course, Srila Prabhupada immediately took up that mood and was trying to somehow or another think how I will become Krishna, spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, especially in the Western world. So he thought, because he was told by an astrologer when he was young that he would be a very wealthy man, one of the richest men in the world. So he thought, I will become very wealthy, and when I become very wealthy, I will use that wealth to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So of course there was a lot of activity for business and what have you, but Krishna, by different tricks, he took away everything from Prabhupada. He took away his business, he took away his wealth. And of course then when his business and his wealth was taken, and his family, were looking at him and thinking, what sort of a useless person are you? We don't want you anymore, Go out and do something useful. So they weren't very favourable to him, they weren't very kind to him. So he lost the affection of his family. In this way, everything became, a lifetime of struggle, in one sense, became useless. But then he understood that, Krishna has taken away everything and he's put me in this suffering position, so that I have no choice but just to surrender unto him, to take complete shelter of Krishna, I have no assets, I have no ability, I have no knowledge. Somehow or another, Krishna, if you give me the ability to spread this Krishna consciousness, then by your grace it will happen. Otherwise, and I will also be delivered by your grace. Right? So Krishna put him in that situation. And because these are pastimes, Krishna enacts his pastimes. It's described that the mother teaches her daughter, and then the daughter teaches all the other sisters like this. Krishna, he performs pastimes with his devotees, and then those devotees, by their example and by their teachings, they teach everyone else in the same way. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada's instructions to us to be very serious about Krishna consciousness, it's there from Shastra, it's there from Guru, but Krishna also, allowed him to live, that pastime, and to see, to experience it. So it's not that Srila Prabhupada is giving us some instruction that is just book knowledge. Krishna allowed him to see firsthand. The same with the Pandavas. The Pandavas, they experienced so much obstacles and struggle in their attempt to be Krishna conscious and to help establish Krishna conscious rule for the world. So therefore, their instructions are not just book knowledge or this is what I've heard. They have, it's their personal realization, a lifetime of reciprocating with Krishna and getting first hand fresh information like this. So in this way, we're hearing here about the Avanti Brahmana, this situation here is very similar to a situation Srila Prabhupada went through in one sense. But you will find that any sincere devotee who becomes a little intoxicated with an opportunity to be happy in the material world, they will also experience this. Krishna will take away everything. But never ever fear that, oh, you know, because a lot of people, they fear becoming Krishna's devotee because they know he does this. You know, they know that. That's a fact. If you go and worship Lakshmi, should, you know, if you do it, you should give. But, you know, if you worship Shiva, he's very easily pleased, and, you know, your business will prosper. But if you approach Krishna, yes, let my business prosper, he just may send you broke. So people know this. But anyway, he says to Arjun, people know that I'm tricky, but Arjun, you tell everyone that my devotee will never perish. And the people may not believe me because they know that I'm tricky. But if you tell them, Arjun, it's okay. You will never perish. And therefore we see, did Srila Prabhupada perish? Krishna took everything off him. Do we look and think, oh, you know, Prabhupada lost everything. How sad. What a miserable life. Krishna helps one to become Krishna conscious, and then becoming Krishna conscious, Krishna gives you himself. Actually, Krishna takes everything off of the devotee just so that they have no other possession. When they have no other possession, then the only thing they want is Krishna. And when you want Krishna only and not other things, then Krishna will give you himself. And when you have Krishna, then you have the greatest treasure. So therefore we see that Srila Prabhupada had the greatest treasure. The Pandavas had the greatest treasure. Queen Kunti had the greatest treasure. All the great devotees of the Lord, although they appear in one sense to be impoverished, but actually they had the greatest treasure, and that is that they had friendship with Krishna. We should, you know, not approach the Supreme Lord as a mercantile community, that as soon as there's some difficulty, there's no more business, Krishna. I'm coming to you because, you know, I'm approaching you, praying, serving. If things are going good, yes, we can do business. But if you make me suffer, you know, I think I might go elsewhere. We shouldn't approach Krishna like a mercantile community. We should actually approach Krishna just for his friendship. When Krishna said to Arjuna and Duryodhana that I have 1 million soldiers, and then I have myself. You can take me, and yet I will not fight in the battle. Or you can have my million soldiers, and they will fight. And Duryodhana, yes, he thought, yes, I will take the million soldiers. I'll take the power of Krishna, his wealth, his opulence. And Arjuna thought, no, I just want your friendship. I'm not coming here for anything from you. I just want your friendship. I'll just take you. As my friend, you come with me on the battlefield, even if you're not going to fight. This is the way that we should actually approach Krishna. Just our only business is to make friendship with Krishna, and even if we have to sacrifice the entire world for that friendship, we should never ever give, you know, we should never sacrifice Krishna's friendship for any other gain. That is the greatest loss. We may think that, yes, people come to the temple and they think, yes, I prayed to Krishna for something, yes, now I've got some opulence and now I'm going away. That is the greatest loss. That they could have taken Krishna's friendship, but they've gone away with some little gain. So we should never approach Krishna for anything else but his friendship. And one who has the friendship of Krishna, of course, there's no question of suffering. There's no question. If one lives on a completely transcendental platform, and whatever happens in the material world has no effect. So this is our business in the Krishna consciousness movement. And the best way, of course, to achieve the friendship of Krishna is just to call out his name sincerely. And Krishna is so kind that that is enough. If one calls out Krishna's name sincerely, as a friend, not asking for any business, and that is enough. And Krishna is such a good friend that he will say, that's enough. You've called my name in friendship, that's enough. You've purchased me. All right, so if anyone has any questions or comments. That's right. Yeah, that's the mood in Vrindavan. Of course, they don't care. With that, Rasa was saying that, you know, even if you didn't know that Krishna was God, it didn't matter. You'd still love him. Is that the?
Yes.
So that's the Vrindavan mood. Of course, they're not approaching in Vrindavan. They don't approach Krishna because he's God. They approach him because they love him. And if we can come to that point, that's the perfection stage. Any other comments or questions?
No.
All good, Srila Prabhupada.